Welcome to episode 371 of Fly Away. Here at Outlander Travel, we're passionate about, well, travel. Throughout the years, we've seen so many changes to the industry. But one thing that has stayed the same is the urge to explore our world and make the connections that can only be made through experience. My name's Laura, and this week I'm joined by fellow Outlander travel agents Elizabeth, Lindsay, and Donna. Picture this. You start your day with a leisurely breakfast from the rooftop cafe of your hotel, then set out to explore some of the most beautiful examples of Roman, Gothic, Renaissance, and Ottoman architecture. You visit a local market for lunch before whiling away your afternoon in a thermal bath. Then step out for a delectable dinner and a fun evening enjoying some of the world's most vibrant and unique nightlife. Does this sound like your idea of a perfect day? Sure does for me. Come with us as we relive some of our most cherished memories of Budapest. So let's get started. So for those of you who've been...
I want to go there. I want to do that.
I just got back.
Okay, Elizabeth, you just got back. Tell us, what was one of your favorite things?
So I was only there for one night before a river cruise, which is the way that a lot of people go to Budapest. And I know Lindsay always adds on more nights, which is super smart.
Because I'm greedy.
greedy and smart. We got there at like 4:30 in the afternoon we landed. And so we had a nice dinner. And then we went out to the Ruin Bars, which was super fun. And we didn't have a lot of time. Well, first of all, I was a little jet lagged because I had just gotten in. But also, you know, we did a several course meal with 14 people. So dinner went a little long. So we really only had a little bit of time to do the Ruin Bars. But that was my goal for this trip, was to see the Ruin Bars, because I had not done that before. And we actually stayed at this little boutique hotel right by the Ruin Bars. And then we had a little breakfast and did a food tour. And then, so I would say the two things that I loved the most about Budapest, especially this visit, was the Ruin Bars and food.
So explain to me what a Ruin Bar is, other than it's a bar.
In a ruin.
In a ruin? Okay.
Yeah,
or
They're ruined buildings that just never got renovated or remodeled or taken over. And they've kind of reclaimed this abandoned space in a very unique and creative way, to the point of where I loved watching your, I was there in August, and I have to say that I loved watching your pictures, because it was like you guys did things that I had done a couple times in there. But the bars will have, like, there's one of my favorite ones, which I don't know the name of. I'm sorry. It is included on one of the tours if you do a tour of the Ruin Bars, but they've got bathtubs in there that you can sit in and drink. So they just kind of leave all the old features of the building there and then just put this bar up kind of around it. So you're going to have lights and you're going to have fixtures. And you're going to have tons of people and just kind of a ruin of a building. And it's very unique and kind of not the concept of what you see in a bar or a restaurant where they come in and they make everything look all brand new. They just kind of took what was there and reclaimed that space. And it's really happened after a certain point at night. If you go too early, it's not a lot going on, but kind of by the middle of the night, I think it's quite.
They all in the same area of town, like one right next to each other, or?
Yeah, they're all in the same, of course, the area that was kind of by the Jewish part of town.
Yeah. And I mean, I think there may be one or two ruin bars sort of around, you know, where there might have been another abandoned building, but most of them are in this same area. And it's a very artsy area as well. And like one of them is an old coffee house. That's the thing, is some of these buildings were like really, really grand. And then they just fell to disrepair. So it's not like, you know, it's not like ruins, like Roman ruins. They're, you know, they're modern ruins, I guess. So one of them is this huge apartment building that like they have different rooms. So it almost has become a nightclub, you know, like where you would have different rooms for different things. You can sort of walk around through this space and imagine what it used to be. The one I went to, I'm not even sure what it was. It's one of the more famous ones, but it's more of like a wide open space. Like you go into the building and then the whole inside of the building sort of
I think that's the one that's included on the tour. I think that was the one I went last or 2 years ago.
Yeah. But we didn't do a Ruin Bar tour because we had that dinner, you know, that night. So on our food tour, we saw the one that was a coffee house. One of these grand coffee houses, but we didn't go in because it was midday and it wasn't open.
Did you see, when you were down there, did you see that lot with the food, where the food trucks are?
No.
Mm-mm. Okay. So they have a foodie section down there too.
So the bars just serve drinks. They don't serve food.
Some of them do serve food. So the one that I went to, actually, when we went to get seated, she said, well, I can't give you a food menu because the kitchen's closing. And we were like, that's okay. We're not here to eat.
So you got a 14 course meal.
So some of them do have food, kind of the same way some breweries also serve food. It's like,
okay.
But I will say, when you go out at night, I've done a couple different food tours in Budapest, and one of them I got super lucky. Actually, two tours I got really lucky. They were supposed to be shared with other people, and when I booked into them, and then I guess they just canceled, and I ended up with a private tour.
Wow.
It was me and this guy. It was like I was on a date, but like a platonic date. And he took me to a lot more places than he said he would have on the regular tour because it was just one person.
So. And you didn't have to wait around for everybody to get finished.
You had to wait for everybody to finish. So I got this amazing, amazing tour. You're doing yourself a big disservice if you go to Budapest and you do not allow yourself time to eat the local food. And I'm not just talking about walking out. This is one of the cities I feel like you're missing out if you don't do a food tour, whether it's a organized paid for one with a local or just somebody you know, because you're never going to find half of the most amazing things I've eaten there were things I couldn't have found on my own. And I'd spent so many days there before and had never been to the market on this last trip in August, I actually ditched a tour. I was on a paid tour, ditched the rest of the day to spend the entire day in the food market because it was so incredible. This is one of those places where you want to kind of let your stomach lead you down some paths you might not have gone. Otherwise it's a beautiful place to explore. And of course you have to have the goulash. Did you like the goulash?
So I'm not a stew or a soup person. And of course, that's part of the discussion about goulash is it a soup or is it a stew? They consider it a soup, but I consider it a stew. However, I had it the first time I went to Budapest was 3 years ago, and we made goulash over a fire and all of that. It's okay. I don't get the charm. It's not my thing.
You just haven't had the right recipe.
Both of them were good. It's just I don't necessarily want to eat it again. So it's very warming, which was nice because I was there in November. And so being warm was good. But yes. And then, you know, the paprika, the Hungarian paprika on everything. So you become a paprika aficionado.
And you want the paste. You don't want the powder. Yes. You want the paste to get the flavor. Did you have the langos? That's one of my favorite.
Yeah. Fried bread. I mean, you can't go wrong with that. You can't.
Yeah. Fried bread with just whatever you want on it, but mostly sour cream and cheese, I think, is the traditional. Mm-hmm. And the chimney cakes. And it was kind of cool because that was the first place I'd ever had chimney cake. And then getting to see it throughout the rest of the world. Seeing the different versions of it everywhere that I've been after that first trip to Budapest, that I got to kind of see how.
What is a chimney cake?
So it's like it's dough wrapped around like a hot metal, what do you call it, like a cylinder? And the center is empty.
Yeah.
And it's fried bread, fried dough, and they usually put like cinnamon on it.
They turn it over a fire, so it's sort of roasted. I mean, it's kind of hard to describe. I don't even know how they cook it completely.
Like baked, fire-baked dough around a cylinder. And then they'll get really creative with it. In a lot of places, they'll stuff it with ice cream and just about anything you can think of to put in it. But I think the traditional is just the plain.
Yep. I had one stuffed with apple pie filling. I mean, like apples, like cinnamon apples. Oh, so good. And again, that's another thing that'll warm you up. And it was a treat for me because that was also a goal of mine. The Ruin Bars was a goal. And then the chimney cake was a goal because the first time I went to Budapest, I did not have it. I just missed out. I don't even know how I missed it, but I didn't see it anywhere. And so I was like, I'm going to get it this time. And on our food tour, it was not promised to us on our food tour, but right at the end, and she didn't know anything about my vow. We're getting toward the end of the day. And I'm like, we're getting on the ship. I'm not going to get a chimney cake. And she stopped at this little, like a little stand, like, you know, a little street market. And she came back with these wrapped chimney cakes. And I was like, yay, it was like Christmas. She said, nobody's ever reacted like that. I squealed. I was so excited. So I got my chimney cake.
It sounds like a upgraded version of what we did in Girl Scouts, where we took Bisquick and wrapped it around a stick and cooked it over the fire.
Kind of the same thing.
Yep, yeah. I think
you're going to find it. Yeah.
That's the idea.
Call them Doughboys or something like that. I can't even remember now, but you know what I'm talking about, Donna?
I do. And yeah, that's pretty much what it is.
Yeah. You'll find it all throughout Eastern Europe. I mean, you'll find it like we saw it in Romania and I saw it in Slovakia. And
yeah, I had the apple pie one that I had was in the Czech Republic.
Yeah, I bet I know which stand you got it from too, because there's only one stand down there and the guy's making the thing right.
Well, so the one on the food tour was out by the train station. That was the stand. Okay. There were several in Český Krumlov where you can get them. So, yeah.
Okay, Donna, what was your favorite part of it? We've heard about the bars and the food. Was there anything?
For me, definitely the baths. Oh, that is like my absolute favorite thing to do in Budapest. We spent all day, and I went from pool to pool to pool to pool to pool, get a massage, go to the pool, go to another pool, get another, you know, go sit in the palm room, then go get some lunch, and then go sit in another pool and another pool and another pool. We were there for, you know, what, 10 hours?
Where did you go? What spa did you go to?
The big one it starts with an S.
I can't say it. This
I can't pronounce it.
What's the palm room, Donna?
It's actually in a kind of an adult area. It's quiet and it's just a relaxation spot. It's the Shinzingi bath. And my son was out there and they have this one bath that has like a whirlpool in it. And he was sitting there and he basically walked around that whirlpool for hours. But at the end of the night, he slept like a log.
Yeah.
So are they really warm? Are they public? Are there lots of
They are public, and there's about 20 different pools and they're all different temperatures. Some are inside, some are outside. So you basically find the one that really works best for you. And so you can go from cold to hot to warm to mediocre to tepid, and you can kind of do all this stuff, and you can sit out there when it's snowing. I mean, it's nice enough that you can do that.
And the Shani, I do believe that that's the thermal spa that also has the beer. So,
oh yes, you can go. You get a beer.
A beer spa. It's a totally separate company, totally separate experience that you have to purchase a pass for. But I like the Gellert spa. Downtown.
And is the beer warm or cold?
I don't know, because I didn't do it because I just drank at the food stand.
It's warm beer, and it's they give you a keg of your own to drink, so you're not drinking the stuff that you're sitting in. But you get like a little thing that you can pour your own beer while you're sitting in the beer.
Yes. So it is really a cool place to go, and it's really not that unreasonable. And you can spend all day there.
Yeah.
And that right there is a good reason to come in yet another night early for your river cruise. Because both times that I've gone to Budapest, it was for a river cruise, and I only stayed one night. And so I have yet to experience the spas. So because it's a time investment. I mean, you need to have time to go over there.
And yeah, we actually drove there from Vienna. So we actually spent like 3 days there.
Yeah, I think you really need like 3-4 days on either end. You have some time to really enjoy it. And then there are spas at all the hotels too, because thermal spas are, it's just a way of life. I mean, they value their health, and it's just part of taking care of yourself and self-care.
Yes.
Enjoying the spa. So
and then at the hotels, they're included, or
some of them are not, most are not, but some hotels do have, like one of the boutiques that I stayed at on my most recent trip to Budapest did have a spa included. And in fact, I really wanted to go back to the Gellert Spa. Saying that wrong, Gellert Spa. I wanted to go back to the Gellert because I love it so much. But I didn't do that because I enjoyed so much. I spent so much time in the free one in my hotel. There was nobody else in there. And it was this nice little overlooked a garden area. Had there been a bunch of other people using it, I probably would have gone back and gone to one of the other thermal spas. But yeah, you can find some accommodations that do have it included.
Okay, so you love the food and you love the spas. What else do you love? And the bars?
The architecture. I mean,
driving
around. I mean, there's so many interesting buildings and Gothic architecture to look at that we don't have in the United States. So it's really fascinating just to walk around and drive around.
I think one of the most famous buildings in the world is actually in Budapest. People don't necessarily know it's there, but whenever you see a picture of a dark river with this lit up, beautiful government building, it looks like almost a palace, that's the Parliament building in Budapest. And that's, you know, one of the most popular things to do is to be on the river in the evening so that you can see it lit up, because the city lit up from the river is just absolutely gorgeous. And there are other buildings that light up, but that is the most famous, and it is spectacular sailing by it.
It's beautiful. It's such an iconic, I mean, usually if you see a picture of Budapest, you see that building. Mm-hmm. That's the painting that you see. That's the picture that you see. I did something really cool. One of the times I did a Trabant car tour. And I highly recommend doing that. The old little German cars from like the 60s. There are very few of them left in the world, and getting to drive one around the city and kind of getting to experience that. There's actually Trabant Cafe in downtown in Budapest that you can kind of go there. And
what makes that car really fun to drive?
It's small. It's very small. It's very, and it has a very distinct place in history. It was kind of the car that people could afford. And it was, but it's got a cult following, which I didn't realize until I was on that tour with some people who were, I waited my whole life to drive one of these. Like, you know? But it was really, I was very afraid at first. I thought, oh God, I'm going to crash it. And then I'm going to be in trouble in another country. And my brain is just wired to worry about the worst case scenario every time. So, but I had such a good time, and the tour company that I went with was very patient, and they were very, very nice. And what's been neat for me too is, again, I have a connection now with that car and that great experience I had. And I've seen in Germany, I get to see a couple of those cars, like used as planters or used outside of museums. And I knew what kind of car it was. And then how do you know? I don't know. I'm not a car person, but so I thought that was kind of cool. Now I know.
So the word Buddha and Pest, is there two different parts of the city?
Mm-hmm. The two different sides of the river. So, okay. And I hope I don't get this wrong. I was just there, so I should get this right. But the Buddha side is the flat side, and it's where most of the action is. And then the Pest side is a hilly side. There's a fort up there, and there's actually some good hiking around there. And it's considered the posh area. So it's also a lot more quiet and laid back and chill. So most of your hotels, not all of them, you know, there's definitely some nice ones on the Pesht side, but most everything happens on the Buddhist side. So, but it's two different, it's two different feels to that. I mean, like when you cross that river, it feels like a whole different city, even though it is now considered one city.
So Buddha,
I was going to ask, is it really two different cities and we just run it together as one?
It's considered one city now.
Buddha is the classier residential side.
Oh, did I get it wrong?
Yeah, and Pest is the action where all the fun nightlife stuff happens.
I still don't know my right, my left either. So,
and what river?
I get it wrong every time. There, have to.
What'd you say, Laura?
What river? You keep talking about a river. What river?
The Danube. The Danube. Yeah. So the big mama river of Europe. It's the second biggest river in Europe, I believe. Next to the Volga. So not next to the Volga, but after the Volga. So yeah.
Which is why a lot of river cruisers use that river.
Exactly. And I mean, it is one of the widest rivers, and on a Danube river cruise, you can go through a total of something like 10 countries total. If you do the upper and the lower Danube, it stretches quite a ways.
And actually that's what I'm getting ready to do.
The upper and the lower.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a nice long trip.
On a river cruise, you're doing that?
Yes.
So I have a question to ask you about the goulash.
Okay.
So I grew up with my mom making what she called Hungarian goulash. And she always served it over something called Spätzle, which I believe is German.
It is German.
And noodles.
Do they serve their goulash over noodles, or they just serve the meat in the sauce?
Just the stew, if you want to call it that. Just the goulash.
Yeah, because it's kind of a thicker.
They call it a soup. And actually, the goulash I had this time was more of a soup. But, you know, we went to another restaurant where it was almost pot roast. I mean, it was mostly solid with just a little bit of hint of sauce. So, but if you ask people in Hungary, they'll tell you it's a soup. They consider it to be a soup.
And it really does vary from restaurant to restaurant, from recipe to recipe. It's kind of one of those my mama made it best type dishes where everybody has a and the best one I've ever had was actually on Avalon Waterways on river cruise. The chef's the recipe that he used and he did give me that recipe, and I did try and recreate it at home, but it makes so much.
The traditional way to make goulash, though, is over a fire in a cauldron. Yeah. So that was when I got to make it, that was actually really fun. I'm like, well, it's more fun to eat when you get to cook it over a fire in a cauldron. You start with a, you know, slab of lard in there, and then you add the ingredients, and it always has a meat component, and it's a red sauce. Right. But then other than that, it can sort of, and it has to start with a lard. Is a really important thing as well. So it seems to me that if, as long as you have a cauldron, lard, meat, and a red sauce, it can be called a goulash. After that, it's all sort of gravy.
I made mine in a Le Creuset, and I'm going to go ahead and call that a modern cauldron.
Close to a cauldron. Yeah.
Le Creuset. In fact, I only bought that overpriced thing because I wanted to make goulash. That was that I wanted to sear the meat. I wanted all the juices and the flavors to still be in there. I didn't want to lose any of that. And that's what I used to make mine, but I really like it.
Now you've made me curious about looking it up. My mom made it, and my sister's children, my niece and my nephew, absolutely love it. And they request it for their birthdays. And they both know how to make spätzle, so they always stir it over spätzle with lots of dill. But my nephew will come up the night after his birthday. And he'll put the spätzle and the spätzle and the goulash, and then he puts a fried egg on top of his goulash.
Yeah.
And he says it's his favorite breakfast in the world.
I have kind of an anything goes as long as you have minimum ingredients in it.
Yep. Yeah. But the spätzle, that is definitely, they don't serve it over anything. Even the fried bread we were talking about before, the langos, that is on the side. It's a soup. So it wouldn't be something you spoon over something else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I haven't tried interested. I want to look up recipes now.
Yeah. But I did. Well, I can, I'll photocopy that. I'll copy that one that I got, take a picture of it and send it to you. Listen to me. I'm old. Photocopy it. I'll just snap a picture and send it to you, Laura.
No, I want you to put it on the Ditto machine.
2021. So I haven't done it yet. I haven't tried to make it yet, but we did as a bonus in that cooking class I did in Austria, where I learned how to make, schnitzel and, potato salad, and they did kind of teach us how to make spetzel at the same time. He's like, okay, fine, because people were asking. But so I haven't tried to make it yet. I'd like to make that. Now you have me curious. I think I want to try it with the goulash, because I grew up with like the American, I don't know, version with noodles in it.
No, and there was something on our food tour when we had the goulash. They also brought out a side dish that was kind of Hungarian macaroni and cheese that, mm-hmm, I suppose one could argue is related to spätzle. And that's the thing too, is as you move through these countries on the Danube, you start seeing crossovers where, you know, like Wiener Schnitzel, my whole life I thought was German food, but it's not. It's from Austria. And which is, I mean, is named after Austria. And then when you get to Germany, you'll see versions of schnitzel, but none of them are called Wiener Schnitzel because there are other versions of it. And like the Germans will put gravy on it or whatever. So you see sort of these like weird ties where I can see that whatever that macaroni and cheese thing was called that was in Hungary, it transforms to spätzle or vice versa. I don't know.
Yes.
Weird how food is this universal language that kind of ties us all together. And yes, if you trace it all back, it's kind of like trying to find the origin for a fairy tale. You're like, oh, this recipe has been translated and moved as people move. And
well, and of course that river has been, you know, moving people and, you know, has been a form
the Danube,
of
trade.
Yeah. I mean, it's been like a central feature. So, you know, that things are moving up and down that river. And obviously, you know, that trade is going to lead to the sharing of ideas. So when you start looking at the food from each place along the river, and I know we're mostly focusing on Budapest tonight, but you sort of see that transition. And it's like, oh, I see, you know, this is related to that dish. And this is, you know, so goulash too, I think sort of you can get it in pretty much any country along the Danube, but it'll be different. You know, it'll taste different. It'll look a little bit different.
If you think about just domestically, you know, it's like, think about like grits, you know, and how grits started as like hominy. Mm-hmm. Hominy went to grits, and in some places grits were served as a sweet like cereal. Mm-hmm. And you know, then it became cheese grits, and then it became shrimp and grits, and as you're moving down the southern seaboard,
I'll eat them all.
Yeah. As somebody who was raised above the Mason-Dixon line, it was so weird for me after growing up with like sweet grits, like cream of wheat. I'm going to get hate. We'll get our first like hate. Cream of wheat is not grits. But that was what the Northerners had. I mean, like cocoa wheats or whatever it was. And then the first time my husband put like grits in front of me, and I'm like, what is this butter? Why is there butter on here? Why is there cheese on this?
Yep.
Yeah. So I can just definitely see how that, you know, how countries, it kind of travels. People taste it and they like it and they put it with what they put it with, and
yep,
they make it their own.
You know, we were only in Budapest. It could be that somewhere else in Hungary they do serve it with schnitzel. I mean, like, maybe that's entirely possible. Yeah,
I bet it's like dialects from the language. Yeah. You know, if you go out, you're gonna find, you know, because even if you think about like lasagna or something like a dish that's made here. I mean, how many ways are there to make apple pie, for goodness sake?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, some people put cheese on it.
50 million ways to make apple pie. And, I don't know. I want to try all the goulash. So I'm a big,
something else I learned from the food tour, you know, we talked about the chimney cake, but we went to a bakery, and Hungary actually has a national contest every year for cakes. And there's this like period of time where it can only be served by the person who created it, you know, the bakery that created it. And then it becomes like basically a national recipe and everybody can make it. Yeah. And I had no idea that there was such a, you know, such a sweet tooth in Hungary.
Do you remember what that, there's a pastry there. It's like a cherry, like a tart. I feel like I'm doing them a disservice by not remembering what it's called, but it's another one of the national dishes in that's really famous, and there's a whole entire cafe that their family's been making it for generations and generations in downtown. And if you did a food tour in Budapest, you probably went there.
No,
I can't remember what the heck it's called. I want to keep wanting to call it strudel, because strudel is so ingrained in my vernacular that I.
No, we didn't have a fruit tart at all on our food tour. So, but you know, you can only go so many places, right?
Well, you say that, but every time I try.
Well, but I really did only have 24 hours, so yeah, yep. And I think that
now I want to go to Budapest.
Oh, yeah, you have to go.
And it's one of those places that I didn't think I really had that much interest in. I didn't know much about it. And so I didn't know. I was like, what am I going to see there? But then you start reading about it. It's like, oh, spas, which I still haven't done. And the food, the variety of food. And then the ruin bars. The history of the country is just so interesting. And the architecture truly is gorgeous. And any city that's on water is going to have an appeal to me. I love cities like that. But then they literally have water running through it too, with all these springs underneath. So it's such a unique place, really, really cool. I can't believe I got the Buddha and the Pest wrong.
I think that's what we should do next year as a team. We should all go to Budapest.
I'd like to go in the. You got to go in the summer. I haven't been in the summer. I've only been when it's cold. So I would like to go when it's warmer. You went, Donna, in the summer as well, didn't you?
I did. Yeah. And I'm going to be going in the spring. You know, next year. So
yeah, I wouldn't mind going. It was a little bit warmer when I wouldn't have to bundle up. It wasn't too bad when I was there, but it was still chilly.
Well, that's our show for this week. We hope you want to go to Budapest. Thanks for hanging out with us. Please like our Facebook page, rate us, and be sure to tell your friends about us. You can find our previous episodes on the podcast page of outlandertravel.com, Apple Podcast, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. We'd love to hear from you. So on behalf of Donna, Elizabeth, Lindsay, and myself, Laura, thank you for joining us this week. Gotta fly!